Good afternoon and welcome everyone to this Bioenergy Australia webinar supported by the IEA Bioenergy Task 42. So I hope you can hear me well. If not, send me an email and we'll see what we can do. So my name is Lisa, and basically as part of my role in Bioenergy Australia is to coordinate the participation of the organization and Australia in the International Energy Agency Bioenergy Program, the IEA Bioenergy Program. So as part of this program, we organize every year webinar series with the IEA representatives or other speakers that are involved in the tasks we participate in. This webinar, as I said, is supported by Task 42, which is the task on biorefining. Our Australian representative for Task 42 is Jeff Bell. Jeff is the CEO of Microbiogen, which is a biotechnology company that develops yeast biocatalysis for biofuels and other industrial applications. So Jeff today will introduce the work on metallurgical coal replacement undertaken at the University of New South Wales. The results of these studies will then be presented by Mani Marufi, which is part of the actual team involved in the development of alternative sources of carbon for steelmaking. Jeff will then quickly talk about the opportunities for metallurgical coal replacement and the benefits for second-generation biofuels in Australia. At the end, we will then have time for questions. So before we begin, just be aware that you will all be muted during the presentations, and this is to avoid background noise, basically. But at the end, of course, I will unmute whoever wants to ask a question. In order for you to let me know that you want to ask a question, basically you should see a little hand close to your name on the left-hand side of the control panel. You can just click on that hand if you want to ask a question after the presentation, and I will unmute you. So I think that's it from my side, and we are good to start. So, Jeff, the floor is all yours.
So thanks very much, Lisa, and thanks everyone for attending the webinar. As Lisa said, my name is Jeff Bell. I'm CEO of Microbiogen. I'll just go to the next slide. What I want to do is just give a little bit of an introduction to the two groups that work together and a bit about what we do. So this is a collaboration between the Smart Centre at University of New South Wales, and it's led by Professor Veena Sahawala. I think I said that right. But we've known Veena for a long time, and you may have seen her too. She's, if anyone remembers the old New Inventors, she was on that panel. So she's the engineer on that panel. So reasonably well-recognized person. She's been working in this sort of area of alternative materials for coal making for a long time. And the group at University of New South Wales actually successfully commercialized what's called polymer injection technology. This is where you get old rubber tires, mix them with coke, and inject them into electric arc furnaces for producing steel. And in fact, this process improves both slag forming and efficiency. So very interesting. And what's really important about us collaborating with them is this is not at the small scale that this technology has actually been commercialized. And you can see over 84,000 heats around the world and 2.4 million recycled tyres so far. So they've been a great partner for us, and we've been working with them for a few years now. A little bit about Microbiogen. We're an industrial biotechnology company. We specialise in organism or biocatalysts for biofuels. We've been working on second-generation biofuels for over 15 years. Through that 15 years, we needed hydrolysis to develop our yeast strains. And as part of that process, we were using various hydrolysis processes to generate those substrates, but we always ended up with this lignin. So we've done, you know, things like autohydrolysis, concentrated acid, dilute acid, and in fact, the most common process we use is the NREL pretreatment technology that utilizes dilute acid, and it's the lignin from that process that we have developed in our own labs using the NREL technology, which we've collaborated with the University of New South Wales. So they've been using that material to do this whole program. A little bit about us further is that we have actually been successful in our ethanol yeast strains. And as of now, think of a big backyard swimming pool. Strains that we've developed would now fill that backyard swimming pool with bioethanol, but we would fill 1,000 to 2,000 of those backyard pools every day with the yeast catalyst that we developed. So both groups have now had plenty of experience with scale up, and so I think that the talk that Simone is going to give actually hopefully will give some interesting insights. So without further ado for myself, I will pass on to Simone. So Simone.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for attending this webinar. This is a great pleasure for me to be here and present some of the work actually we are doing in a Smart Center. As actually Jeff mentioned, my presentation today will be about actually the potential opportunity for lignin and other carbon bearing, you know, waste material as a substitute for met coke in steel making. So I start with a brief background of steel making, and then I will show you what is, the challenge and problem associated with steel making, and why we think that there is a great opportunity for biomass actually there. When we are talking about biomass, the first thing actually comes to our mind is renewable energy. Biomass has been used as a source of energy for many years in different actually forms, as steam gas, biofuel, as you know, diesel, alcohol, and you know, different form. There is more potential there, you know, in biomass or any material actually sourced from biomass, such, you know, lignin. These type of material are a valuable source of carbon and hydrogen. These two elements are actually key elements in many metallurgical processing. What I'm trying to say, these resources are more than energy because of the valuable element which are present inside these material. To start with the, you know, brief background with the steel making, as you know, steel making is one of the most energy intensive industry in the world. More than 70% of the energy which is required in steel making is covered by coal-based, you know, thermal plant. Either is coming it is covered by electricity, which is coming from coal, or, you know, coming from, you know, combustion, which is coming from, you know, thermal coke or met coke, which actually again is coming from coal. So if you have a look at the graph on the right side, so you could see the carbon dioxide emission contribution of each fuel cell, including, you know, coal, oil, and gas. And you can see coal has got the highest contribution in terms of the emission of carbon dioxide. So that means that when you say that 70% of the energy which is required in a steel making is covered by coal, that means that a significant amount of carbon dioxide is produced by steel making. So basically, to produce 1 ton crude steel, we need around 700 kilograms of coal, basically met coke. And these days, the production of steel per year in you know, global level is around 1.7 billion tons. So which means that we need something like 1 billion ton of coke. So that amount of coke is going to produce 3 billion tons of carbon dioxide, which is quite huge, and it is about 27% of the global manufacturing sector, which is quite, you know, high. So basically, in steelmaking, we use, you know, two types of coke, as you know, met coke or thermal coke. Each coke actually has got a different function, and we use for different reasons. For thermal, you know, coal, the main, goal is that to provide the energy which is required for steelmaking. But when we talk about the met coke, we are looking for more parameters. It's not just thermal and, you know, energy. With actually shortly, I will explain to you that when we talk about met coke, we consider three properties. Basically, it's going to be thermal property, chemical property, and physical properties. That's why in terms of price, met coke is much higher than thermal coke, because when we use met coke, we want more function from that coke compared to the thermal coal. As if you have a look at the graph actually on the right, you could see the difference between the price of thermal coke and met coke. So it means that when we talk about biomass, lignin, and any carbon bearing material, is not only about the energy. There are more functions that we could get from those type of material, which I explained to you shortly. As I told you, steelmaking is, one of the most energy intensive industries worldwide, and the carbon dioxide emission in this industry is very high, and steelmaking is already blamed for the emission significant amount of carbon dioxide. That's why from, several years before start making, in global level, they started to look for alternative opportunities. They could tackle this problem. So the problem is not only the emission of carbon dioxide, because of the high amount of coal and coke that actually steelmaking is using, these natural resources is getting depleted. So they have to find alternative resources for their processing. And as you actually observed in the previous figure, the price of met coke is increasing. So there are three main reasons that steelmaking looking for opportunity, which could replace their met coke. One is the emission of carbon dioxide, the tightening of the environment regulation. Another one is the depletion of natural resources and the cost of met coke. But actually, steelmaking, they are looking for the solution that is not going to impose significant capital cost to their process, and at the same time, they want to reduce the carbon footprint, but without seriously affecting process efficiency. They don't want anything affect the efficiency of the process. As you know, that steel is one of the most widely metallic material, which actually we use in different aspects in our life, in our transportation, communication, in our construction. These days, at global level, the production of crude steel is something like 1.7 billion tons, and we are expected that by 2050, this production actually reached to 2.3 billion tons. So that means that the production of the steel is going to significantly increase, and that means that we need more carbon bearing material for this processing. What are the key elements of the steel? Basically, carbon and iron are two key elements of the steel. And depending on the type of the steel, the chemical composition of the steel change. So as you can see in this table, you are observing different types of steel, including cast iron, you know, wrought iron and high strength steel and stainless steel. Depending on the function of the steel, the chemical composition is changing, and the chemical composition is a critical factor. So basically we add these element or alloying actually element because we want to change the property of that specific steel and make that specific steel suitable for a specific application. But the main element for any steel is carbon and iron. And other alloying element we add for a specific because we want to add we want to change the physical or mechanical properties of the steel and make them suitable for a specific application. If I want to talk about the process for steel making, generally speaking, steel making basically is performed through two stages. One is primary stage and another one is the secondary stage. In the primary stage, we make, you know, steel. To make a steel, as I mentioned to you, basically two main elements are iron and carbon. Iron is not present in the nature in form of metallic, so it's a form of oxide, and iron oxide, which actually we could get from any ore, they are not in form of in pure form, so they are always with, you know, other gang material. So we need carbon to remove oxygen from the system. So that's one of the reason actually carbon play a significant role in steel making. Gradually I'm going to explain to you why carbon is important in steel making. People normally think that we use carbon because they want to do combustion and provide the energy for the steel making, but it's not the only reason. Yes, the, you know, combustion and providing energy is one of the reason, but the role which is played by carbon is much more than, you know, a combustion and providing energy. One of the functions which is played by carbon is as reducing agent. As I mentioned to you, we need to remove oxygen from the system, and carbon reacts with, you know, iron oxide and remove oxygen from the system in form of gas. And besides, you know, iron ore and carbon, we use limestone as fluxing material because we want to improve the fluidity or basically decrease the viscosity of the molten material inside the furnace and improve the efficiency of the process. But for the, as I mentioned, steel making is done through two stage, primary stage and secondary stage. For the primary stage, there are different methods. One of the method is, you know, blast furnace. To, you know, through blast furnace, they produce pig iron and then use basic oxygen vessel to make steel using that. And there is a separate process that actually these days is quite, you know, widely used worldwide, is electric arc furnace, because in electric arc furnace, instead of ore, they use scrap steel. But still, in this process, they need coke. These are actually the primary stage. In the primary stage, they make steel. And what is the secondary stage? In the secondary stage, they do refinement, or basically they play with the composition of the slag, or they add alloying element because, you know, to meet that chemical composition that they want for a specific steel. But if we want to replace, in this figure, you know, in any furnace and any stage, we need coke. We need coke for different reasons. Obviously, depending on the type of the furnace, depending on, you know, on the procedure, the type of the coke and the functionality that we want from the coke is different. But Let's start with the secondary SH. In the secondary SH, as I told you, it is about the refining or changing the chemical composition. This SH is very critical. That means that we don't have that much flexibility in this stage because the composition of the coke and material is really important, and we don't have that much freedom to add, you know, any type of coke at this stage. But in the primary stage, specifically for the case of electric arc furnace, we've got much more flexibility. As I mentioned to you, for the electric arc furnace, we already use a scrap, which is, you know, waste material. And it's going to give us more freedom in terms of the chemical composition of the initial material. If the initial material has impurity or the structure is not that perfect, it still can be good enough for the process. So that's why our focus is mainly on the electric arc furnace. Yes, coke is really important in steel making, but to actually give a brief explanation about how actually they make coke from coal, they just do simple heat treatment in oxygen-free environment to remove, you know, partial, you know, volatile material and moisture, and to make, you know, carbon mask, which is called coke. As I told you, coal is important in steel making and basically coke has a direct impact on the efficiency of the process and the quality of the product. And basically, three important parameters are critical when we talk about coke. One is physical property, another one is thermal and chemical properties. Physical property of the coke, which is significant, I mean, it is really important, specifically in the blast furnace, is the ability of the coke to withstand the breakage at room temperature. Basically, this reflects coke behavior outside the furnace and upper part of the furnace. Why this is important? Because we want, you know, coke to be strong enough, and if, you know, it is break down to the fine particle, it is so difficult to charge into the furnace. I mean, the coke is going to fly away from the furnace with the gas, because in the furnace, normally coke and other charged material, they introduce from top of the furnace, and the gas is coming from the bottom. So we don't want fine material which actually fly away from the system. And the potential of the coke to break into the smaller size under high temperature and at carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide environment, which actually going to reflect coke behavior inside the blast furnace, which basically is two-thirds part of the lower part of the blast furnace. And chemical properties of coke. The chemical composition of, when we talk about the chemical composition of coke, basically we talk about the moisture, fixed carbon, total carbon, volatile, ash, phosphorus, and sulfur. Why chemical properties of coke is important? As I told you, coke is the reducing agent. Coke needs to react with iron oxide or other oxide inside the system and remove oxygen from the system. So the rate of the reduction or the efficiency of that reaction is really important. So that means that the chemical composition of the coke is going to have a direct impact on the rate of that reduction, depending on the content of the carbon, either in form of fixed carbon or total carbon. Coke might have, you know, exhibit a different behavior in terms of reduction of iron oxide. I would like to emphasize that when we talk about the reduction of the iron oxide and the role of coke as reducing agent in steel making, carbon can be in form of solid or in form of, you know, gas, you know, in form of carbon monoxide, methane, or even, you know, sometimes hydrogen, can be the reducing agent in terms of reduction of iron oxide. And is that only reduction of iron oxide? Another reaction which is important is carbonization or diffusion of carbon inside iron. So that's why the chemical composition of the coke is important, because the chemical composition is going to impact the carbonization or the diffusion of the carbon inside the iron. For example, if the ash content of the coke is very high, which actually shows you, you're going to observe that, you know, the ash content of the med coke that currently steelmaking is using is more than the ash content of the lignin that we use for in our experiment. When the ash content is very high, that means that, you know, you've got more oxide in your coke, and they are sort of obstacle or hinder the diffusion of carbon inside the iron. So the chemical composition of the coke or any carbon-bearing source is important, because it's going to have impact on the reduction of iron oxide and further diffusion of carbon inside iron. And this side, you know, there are some unwanted elements, for example, sulfur, phosphorus, and actually we are not keen to have them in our steel processing. So, yeah. Again, three main roles which is played by important to be played by coke. One is physical, chemical, and thermal. Physical role, which is more important in blast furnace, in terms of, because, you know, the coke is going to provide support to the charge column, and is going to have effect on the gas distribution, because we don't want to block the distribution of gas as well. Chemical role, again, in terms of reduction of iron oxide and diffusion of carbon in iron. And thermal role, which actually goes back to calorific value or the energy that we can get from, you know, coke air or any carbon bearing source material. Here, basically, we try to show, because in a smart center, we have been working on different waste materials to investigate their, you know, potential, you know, as alternative carbon source in steel making. As actually Jeff mentioned, we already developed a technology which is called polymer injection technology. In that technology, we successfully actually use rubber in mix with, you know, coke to improve a phenomenon which is called a slag forming in a steel making. And that technology was successful and is already commercialized in several countries. We have been using different, you know, waste material to investigate their, you know, their behavior as a carbon source in the steel making. One of them was actually waste CD, and another one like macadamia nitrile, and we put in this presentation to actually compare with lignin, which is coming from the second generation of bioethanol. In terms of the supply, it's good to, before actually I'll compare the behavior of these three sources in terms of reduction of iron oxide, it's good to have a look at the, you know, at the supply of these material. This figure actually is showing how the trend of compact disc, or actually CD, has changed over time from 1990 to 2050. As you can see, it significantly dropped to 75%. So if you just do simple calculation, we could see that if actually we were able to collect all these CD, and, you know, we were able to use all of them as carbon source, you know, in steel making, it's just going to have contribute to, 0.01% of the coke that actually we annually need. So that means that even though these waste material can exhibit very good behavior in terms of, you know, in terms of being a good substitute for med coke, but because in the supply is not that high, still we might have problem, and, you know, they might, you know, they are not able to have a great contribution to the future. And another carbon source that actually we use, macadamia nutshell. So this is a growing industry with about actually 375,000 ton per year. Still good compared to compact disc, but compared to the lignin, is not that high. For the lignin, there is a massive potential there in terms of, you know, the supply. So if actually we could, you know, replace 10% of global demand for gasoline with biomass, so we were able to get 260 million ton of lignin that we can use for the replace it with coke. So that means that compared to waste, CD and macadamia natural lignin is sitting in a good position in terms of, you know, supply. And shortly I'm just gonna show you the result actually we got in terms of role of lignin as a reducing agent in a steel making. First step was, you know, to compare the chemical composition of these carbon bearing source, met coke, waste CD, macadamia nutshell, and lignin. As you could see, for the case of met coke, solid carbon is 85%, but for waste CD, macadamia nutshell, and lignin, solid carbon is 20%, and the ash content, which actually is not our favorite in met coke, is around 11%, but for the case of, you know, for example, lignin is 6%. And total carbon is, for met coke is 85, and for the case of waste CD, macadamia, and lignin is about, for the waste CD is around 77, and for macadamia nutshell 48, and for lignin is 40. Again, I would like to emphasize that when we talk about, carbon as element, we don't need to just focus on solid carbon, because some carbon is present in form of volatile. So we need to pay attention to the total carbon, because even in terms of reduction of iron oxide or diffusion of carbon into the iron, it's not just only solid carbon. Carbon can, you know, play that role from volatile in form of carbon monoxide or methane. So for us, total carbon is really important as well. So if you know have a look at the total carbon, you could see that, you know, for example, for the case of lignin, is not, you know, that 40%, you know, total carbon, and besides, the ash content is not high compared to the met coke, which is 11%, and the analysis of mineral ash coke for the case of met coke is 60% silica, but for the case of lignin, actually calcium oxide is very high, which actually we need calcium oxide anyway in steel making as a fluxing material. To investigate the behavior of lignin and other carbon-bearing source, so we do two sets of experiments. One set is, you know, we investigate the carbon-bearing itself to observe how they behave under heat treatment at high temperature, because it's important for us to fully understand their behavior. And the second stage is, you know, their behavior in terms of reducing agent for the reduction of iron oxide. So we did two series of experiments. One experiment was, you know, to just only investigate the behavior of carbon-bearing source at high temperature to observe actually how they behave. And in another series, we observe their behavior in terms of reducing agent in reaction with iron oxide. Why we want to, you know, investigate, carbon-bearing resources, either, you know, waste CD, macadamia nutshell, or lignin at high temperature. Why it's important for us? Because as I mentioned to you, for the reduction of iron oxide, chemical composition and the structure of carbon is really important. For us, it's really important to know that, for example, over time, how actually the carbon-bearing resources decompose over time, how the structure is changing, if the porosity increase or decrease. So, because all these parameters are going to affect on the efficiency of the reduction of iron oxide. We want to increase the rate of the reduction. We want to increase the recovery of the iron oxide from either ore or slag. One of the problems that at this stage steelmaking is facing is that the met coke that they are using, their process, is not that efficient in terms of reduction of iron oxide. That's why they end up getting a significant of iron oxide unreacted in the slag. So one of the problems that the steelmaking has got, I mean, they are facing at the moment, they are producing a lot of slag. Slag is a mixture of oxide, I mean, unreacted, you know, material, unreacted, you know, oxide. So they are producing a significant of slag with high content of iron oxide. So that means that they are losing a lot of, you know, iron oxide because the med coke that at the moment they are using is not efficient in terms of reduction of iron oxide. The rate and the recovery of the iron oxide is not that high. So that's why they end up getting, you know, they end up losing a lot of iron oxide in their byproduct, which is called a slag. So here, we did, you know, we investigated thermal degradation or thermal decomposition of these carbon bearing source using TGA or thermogravimetric, you know, analysis. The experiment actually was done in inert atmosphere under actually nitrogen from room temperature up to 1000 or, you know, 1100-1200 degrees C at a specific heating rate. As you can see, for the case of waste CD, the decomposition actually happened at temperature around 550 degrees C, and for the case of, you know, macadamia nutshell is below 400, and when actually we increase the temperature from 400 to 1300 degrees C, the char yield actually dropped to around 17%. For the case of, you know, lignin was interesting. So yeah, the blue actually curve is DTG graph of DTG graph of the TGA. Basically, this curve is going to help us to observe the different stage associated with thermal decomposition or thermal degradation. As you can see, there is three stage associated with you know, thermal decomposition. The first stage, which is at low temperature around, I think, 180 to 230 degrees C, it attributed actually to extractive material. Extractive material actually, we use this term for very complex organic compound with actually low molecular weight and low thermal stability, like, you know, alcohol. So that means that the temperature around 180 to 230, this material starts decomposing and they start breaking and, you know, liberating from the system. With increasing, you know, temperature, the second stage of decomposition actually happened, which actually belongs to polysaccharide material. So the temperature, I think, it's around 230 to 380, and at this stage the decomposition is very fast, and this stage actually is followed with the third stage, which actually belongs to lignin, and this stage is a bit wider, and the decomposition rate associated with this type of compound or polymeric material is larger. That's why it overlaps the previous decomposition stage. So again, for us, important to know that, you know, how fast or how slowly these carbonaceous resources basically decompose, and how their structure, process, porosity, and crystallinity actually change over time, because all these properties is going to affect on the reduction of iron oxide and further diffusion of carbon into iron. The second, you know, after we investigated, after we fully investigated the behavior of carbon-bearing resources in terms of their thermal decomposition, thermal degradation, we started actually doing the experiment in terms of reduction of iron oxide. We mixed this carbon-bearing material with iron oxide, with hematite, and we did heat treatment in inert atmosphere using horizontal tube furnace. And the furnace was connected to the gas analyzer. We observed the gas, which actually was releasing from the system, because monitoring the gas coming from the system is going to give us, you know, insight about the reaction which is happening inside the furnace. This graph, which is actually you are observing, is the XRD analysis of the sample before reduction and after reduction. Basically, A is the hematite or the phase of, you know, iron oxide. The XRD analysis of the hematite before any heat treatment. After actual heat treatment, I mean, after we mix with, you know, base CD and we did heat treatment at 1400 degrees C, as you could see from the, you know, sharp peak in, you know, figure B, you could see the peak which is associated with iron. And you can't see any peak associated with iron oxide. So that means that iron oxide was fully reduced to the metallic iron using this carbon-bearing, you know, result at 1400 degrees C. So this is the XRD analysis for the case of macadamia nutshell. Again, we mixed hematite with, you know, with this material, I mean with macadamia nutshell, and we did experiment at different temperature from 1000 to 1300 degrees C for different timing. Obviously, I didn't put, you know, we didn't put all the results here, but the thing is that, again, for the case of, you know, macadamia nutshell, iron oxide was reduced to the metallic iron after, you know, 20 minutes, you could see that, you know, iron oxide was fully reduced to the metallic iron, and the sharp peaks which actually associated to the metallic iron can be observed at this timing. These are the results of lignite, you know, for different temperature from 1300 to 1600 degrees C. Again, the experiment, we mix hematite or iron oxide with lignite, and we make, you know, we made a pellet out of that, and we did experiment in inert atmosphere in horizontal two furnace at 1300, 1400, 1500, and 1600. Clearly, you could see that iron oxide was reduced to the metallic iron, and you could observe the big iron droplet at 1300 degrees C. This is sponge iron, which actually high carbon content, which actually carbon is freely present inside this iron. This temperature is below the melting point of iron. But when we increase the temperature to 1400, 1500, and 1600 degrees C, carbon starts diffusing in carbon. When carbon actually diffuses in iron, the melting point of iron drop, and iron start you know, melting with increasing temperature and diffusing more carbon. Iron, you know, become fully molten. But because, you know, at 1300 degrees C, we get some carbon freely, you know, present inside the iron. When we increase the temperature and iron start, you know, diffusing, start, you know, melting, you know, some of the basically carbon return back, and that's why at higher temperature you could observe that, you know, some of the carbon deposit outside the iron droplet. But for all cases, even at 1300 degrees C, which is the temperature below the melting point of iron, we get, you know, iron, we got iron droplet. As I mentioned, we had a gas analyzer which was actually attached to the furnace, because it is important for us to observe different gases coming from the system, because it's going to give us clue or insight about the reaction inside the furnace. You could see carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide peak at different temperatures, 1300, 1400, 1500, and 1600 degrees C. The moment that, you know, carbon dioxide, you know, finish or actually reach zero, that means that the reaction has stopped, or iron oxide fully reduced to the metallic iron. As you can see, with increasing temperature to 1500, 1600 degrees C, the reaction was much faster, and the below, I mean, 10 minutes, iron oxide was fully reduced to the metallic iron. So that means that lignin did great behavior in terms of reducing agent in the reduction of iron oxide at 1500 and 1600 degrees C, which is the temperature for iron and steel making. In less than 10 minutes, iron oxide was fully reduced to the metallic iron. So if I want to, you know, conclude, you know, to give a summary of today's presentation, as I mentioned, steelmaking has already faced, you know, problem in terms of the emission of carbon dioxide and the depletion of coal resources and the high price of coke, and they are looking for alternative that actually they could replace the made coke, but at the same time they are looking for opportunity, they are looking for the alternative resources that the efficiency of the process actually they don't want to compromise on the efficiency of the process. Obviously, they want to keep that efficiency high, and at the same time they don't want to add any capital cost to the process. Our experiment is showing that lignin can be a good, alternative for the met coke in the steel making, because you know lignin has got reasonable amount of carbon in terms of either solid carbon or gas or volatile material, and the impurity inside the lignin, the ash content is not that high, 6%, but it's got high content of calcium, which actually is compound we are interested in the steel making, because we are anyway we are adding a flexing material to our steel making because we want to improve the ferroidity or the decrease the viscosity of the molten material. And the reduction rate was very high, less than 10 minutes at 16 and 1500 degrees C. We were able to get full reduction of iron oxide to the metallic iron. And even at low temperatures, which, the temperature below the melting point of iron, we were able to get a sponge iron, which is a very good feedstock for the electric arc furnace. And, yeah, I think I'm pretty much done, and I think Jeff is going to give more explanation regarding the financial aspect of the project.
Thanks very much, Simone. That was great. Look, I'm just going to move on to the last slide. Really, I just want to give it a little bit of a summary. As in the introduction, I work with the Task 42 group, and Task 42 is all about biorefineries. So when we look at a biorefinery, it's all about to maximize the economics, you need to maximize all the streams. So if you're looking at a 2G ethanol plant, yes, it produces ethanol, but you want to make the most value that you can out of all the other side streams that are there. So this work on the met coal actually looks like it has some potential significant legs. So it looks like it could work as a met coal replacement. And based on met coal prices, I won't show you calculations, but basically calculations would suggest that you could increase the net revenues for a 2G ethanol plant by about 10% if you switched from just taking the lignin and burning it for energy to processing the lignin into met coal and replacing your energy for the 2G plant from other sources. So that's quite a bit. And then I don't know if anyone has listened to some of the other webinars, but Task 39 recently did a paper on and a webinar on reduction of fuel costs in second generation type biorefineries, whether it's biodiesel or bioethanol. And they're talking about quite significant reductions, but even ignoring their reductions in terms of scale, etc., between what we're doing with our technology at MicroBiogen is to convert the glycerol organic acids in a 2G plant to feeds. If you converted the lignin into met coal, you talk about a 20 to 25% reduction in operating costs, which is pretty significant. So we think there's a ton of opportunities in the 2G area for improvements. And I guess with that, that's just our numbers. I will pass back to Lisa for any questions.
Thank you very much, Jeff and Tamani, for the presentations. I think we have about 10 minutes for questions. So as I mentioned at the beginning, whoever wants to ask a question, if you're able to see a little hand close to your name, so just click on that hand if you want to ask a question. So I can see there is one question from Annette Cowie from New South Wales CPI. Annette.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. Jeff, I guess this is a sort of a background question, but Tamani referred to the potential for 230 million tonnes of met coal lignin per year, well, equivalent of lignin. I was just wondering where 230 million tonnes of lignin might come from in terms of the biomass source for your 2G ethanol.
Thanks, Annette. Look, it depends. I mean, for example, I think the numbers, I haven't got the numbers in front of me, but I think you need to build something like 1,000 second-gen biorefineries. So wherever that biomass comes from, whether it's forest waste, sugarcane bagasse, it would be all crop waste, etc. I mean, there's plenty of crop materials in the world. It would be a matter of actually building out that sort of capacity. I don't know if that answers your question, but we weren't being specific. I think the general rule of thumb was, you know, 20 to 25% of the biomass of a second-gen biomass would be the lignin, and you would replace, instead of using the lignin for power, that would go to the met coal, and you would use a different source of energy to run the plant, whether that's wind or gas or whatever.
Uh-huh. So you haven't actually investigated the biomass availability behind, that isn't behind the calculation then?
No. This would be, let's assume that their biomass is there, how much met coal would you produce if you generated on a typical 2G refinery, which I think, you know, only 50 or 60% conversion, et cetera, et cetera. So it would be pretty standard sort of conversion rates in a 2G plant.
Thanks.
Thank you, Annette, and thank you, Jeff. Jeff, there is another question from Peter Robson from Boral Timber. Peter, would you like to ask a question? I think we probably lost Peter. Peter, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yeah, thanks very much for this webinar. Two questions for you. You use the words met coke and met coal. Do you mean met coal or met coke? I mean, is the lignin going to go through the coke ovens, or is it going to be used post coke ovens?
I think it is, I mean, met coke. So basically, because as I mentioned, the volatile which is present inside is still useful for the steel making, because they're going to have contribution into the reduction in form of carbon monoxide or methane. So okay. It's going to be met coke, not met coal.
No, that's okay. I'm an ex-steelmaker. I'm just curious. The other question I had for you is, if I had samples of alternative lignin sources, where would I, is there any interest for them, and where would I send them?
You mean in terms of the analysis?
Yeah, I've got alternative lignin sources here.
Yes.
And yes, if there was any interest, I would happily send them down.
Yeah, sure. I think maybe I need to talk to Vina, and, you know, I can give you, I mean, you could see, I think, my email address, so we could, you know, talk through email, and, you know, you could send a sample, and we could.
Okay. Now, let's, Lisa's got my details. Let's do that, because I'm interested to see other uses for this, this bio stuff that I've got.
Yeah.
I'll definitely connect you both, Peter.
Thank you, Lisa.
No worries. Thank you for that. There is another question from Sandy Fowler from Vivicord.
G'day, hello. How are you? Thanks for watching the presentations. Tamani, I wondered if it's probably along the same lines as your previous question from Pete Robson. It was just regarding, would your facilities be available for testing products? I guess it's along the same lines as as the previous question?
The thing is that, I just give a brief, you know, explanation about the procedure. Any sample actually comes here. First, we need to investigate the chemical composition and the characterization, and then we do the actual experiment on the sample. I mean, before investigating the characterization and the composition, we don't do anything. We might be interested. So, I mean, we could talk through email. I mean, that would be the best way. And I can talk to Vina, and we might be able to do for you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I will connect you to Sandy.
Thank you.
No worries. Are there any other questions? Yes, there is a question from Mark Biazuti from BlueSco. Mark? Mark, can you hear us? I think you might have some troubles with your microphone because we don't hear you. I can see you are unmuted, but maybe your microphone is not working properly. If we can't hear you, maybe you can type your question and I can ask it for you. There is a messages box at the bottom of the page. If you want to type your question there or just send me an email, and I can ask your question for you if you can't solve the microphone problem. So in the meantime, while we try to hear from you, there is another question from Peter Robson from, again, Borough Timber. Peter? Maybe you're muted.
Hi, there we go. Yep.
In the
earlier in the presentation, there was a graph showing the approximate cost for thermal coal versus high quality metallurgical coal, and it sort of seemed to be targeting around the $250 a ton. Again, is that when you're talking like for like, that's the met coal going into the coke ovens, or the effective price that's the one on the screen? Again, I'm trying to make, you know, is that the coal price or the coke price? Again, if it's pre-coke ovens as opposed to post-coke ovens, there's a cost of production and there is a loss in mass. So I'm trying to work out, is that a reflection of the lignin number, or would it be higher than that because of the fact it's purer?
I can answer the question. This is just publicly available met coal prices, global met coal prices. So it'll be a certain, I can't remember exactly which one it was. Obviously, thermal coal prices vary depending on the ash and the energy content, et cetera. And met coal prices will vary too. So this is really a general met coal price, but it's definitely the met coal, not the coke.
Okay, you can see my point. I'm just trying to, you know, for people who are making biochar, which is met, would be considered to be a met coke, I'm trying to, in my head, work out what $250 a tonne for met coal would look like once converted to met coke. Is it about $300, $350? Yeah, maybe you can't answer the question. I'm just curious to get a feel for what a met coke versus the met coke equivalent would cost. Or market, what's that look like?
I certainly wouldn't want to off the fly to answer that. I don't know if Simone has a better answer, but I think that's something to be answered, you know, offline. You need to do a bit of investigation unless Simone's got a better answer.
Okay.
I don't think that, you know, anyway, actually, this graph is going to reflect, you know, anything regarding, lignin or biomass. The thing is that, as I mentioned, when we want to get met coke from coal, we do heat treatment in inert atmosphere because we want to remove, you know, volatile moisture. But in the case of, you know, biomass, the carbon, the total carbon, basically is a mass of solid carbon and the carbon in terms of volatile. So anyway, we don't do any preheat treatment to get, you know, coke from biomass. We want to, our aim is that to use biomass as it is in steel making, because we do believe that the volatile still can be, you know, useful for the, you know, for the reduction of iron oxide and another phenomenon which is called slag forming. The principle behind of polymer injection technology for the rubber is the gas which is coming from the rubber. So that's why both solid carbon and gas is really important for us. When we talk about the use of biomass lignin in steel making, we don't talk about the solid carbon. We talk about talk about the whole compound as it is, because, you know, the gas is still useful. So that's why I don't think that, you know, when you are talking about coal and coke, I mean, anyway, it's not going to reflect anything regarding biomass, because we don't plan to do any pre-treatment of the lignin or biomass to make them ready for the steel making.
Yes, but if you're basing it upon what comes out of a 2G ethanol plant is,
yes,
quite different from other biorefinery processes where the lignin would be coming out more like a biochar, so a much, much higher carbon content, very low volatiles. It, you know, the product that I'm looking at, look, it looks like nut coke. It's a black sort of carbonous material. It's about 80% carbon. But we're just curious. I'm just trying to get a bit of a feel, or what, you know, what sort of, you know, these prices are therefore not really interesting because they're telling me what coke is. I'm kind of interested in what the market is for lignin from a steelmaker's perspective.
As
I told you, in steel making, there are different stages, and we are using different types of coke. And for each stage and for each, you know, process, the type of coke that we use is different. The quality is different, and the function that they, you know, they need to do is different. That's why there are a range of price even for the met coke in steel making. For example, the coke that they use in ladle furnace, I mean in the secondary stage, is much more than the coke that they use in the electric arc furnace. Or the coke that they use for injection in electric arc furnace is different from the coke that they use for the top charge. We are not talking about one type of coke. We are not talking about one price. We are not talking about one type of the quality. So they are quite, you know, a wide range of type of coke, and it's all about, you know, finding the optimum condition. And even, you know, the waste material that we investigate to use in a steel making, sometimes we mix. For example, one type of waste material has high content of volatile and another one has got high content of solid carbon. We mix them together and make the composition suitable for that specific, you know, function that we want. It's not like, you know, if that, for example, that specific lignin has got high amount of solid carbon or has got high content of volatile, we can, you know, use that. Still, you know, we mix, you know, different types of resources together. I mean, polymer injection technology is about the mixture of rubber with coke. We mix them at a specific ratio. Depending on the type of coke, we change the ratio and make that optimum for that specific function, which is still slag forming in steel making.
No, I understand. No, thank you.
All right, I think it's probably time to close, and we can definitely continue the conversation offline. As I said, I'm happy to connect whoever have more questions for the speaker. I will connect Peter and Sandy. And I just wanted to thank again the speakers and everyone who attended the webinar. So the presentations will be circulated to the attendees probably in the next few days or early next week. And if you have any feedback, if there is a way how we can improve, just let us know. Thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.